we're already getting to work on Purdue. My assistant, Cam Rell, was who played for me at Stack. So we had a whole, you know, 5-6 days to get ready for Purdue ourselves. You know, two coaches are getting ready for Texas Southern, and then we got one guy getting ready for Purdue. So we knew that could be a possibility. So that's kind of where the whole thing happened, where we said, hey, we could beat Purdue, because Cam kept watching Purdue. And he's like, man, I think we match up well with Purdue. He's like, we knew there were certain teams in that tournament we did not want to play. You know, you go play Kansas, or you go play Alabama, who's got – like, we thought the advantage was in the backcourt. We had better guards. Like the guys I talked about, Dimitri and Grant, we thought we had better guards. So it's like, you know, and then obviously Zach Edey, a major, major mismatch problem. So I'm like, all right, we're going to be able to press them. We're going to be able to make them defend. We can guard their perimeter guys, but Zach Edey might score 50.
It's good, Ruda. How are you, bro?
Can't complain, bro. It's a couple of days before our annual fall break. So I'm excited to go back home, spend some time with the fam. And then when we come back on Tuesday, it's the official start of the season. So it's a really exciting time right now. I'm doing well. How are you, bro?
I'm chilling. I mean, if you see me on YouTube, this light is kind of like right in my face. I'm trying to switch it, but same as you, fall break. We actually have practice on Monday, so we don't really get that break. Coach Keffi knew what he was doing with that one, but definitely excited that the vibes has been really high in the Alfred gym. We know that the league, like I keep saying, is going to be really good, and we're just trying to get better every day. So it's definitely a good time in the year, getting back in the swing of things. But we got a really good episode for the viewers today. As you could tell, we got Tobin Anderson. Coach Tobin, really a legend in his field. He helped currently the head coach at Iona, but spent some time at Division III schools, Clarkson, Lemoyne, Hamilton, and had an historic season at FDU. But before that, he was also a coach at St. Thomas Aquinas, where he really changed the culture at Stack. And they were known as like one of the best teams in all of Division II every year that he was coaching there. But the FDU run was incredible. I mean, they played Purdue and upset them, which made national headlines. Everybody was talking about it throughout the world. One of the biggest upsets in sports history, not just college basketball, but in sports history. And he's a really good coach. I mean, like his system, I'm going to talk about it in a little bit, but it's definitely like we talked to the Grinnell coach and it's like that, but it's like a lot more discipline, a lot more structure. And that's why he's able to compete at the highest level against these high major schools. But I mean, what you got to say about Coach Anderson?
I mean, it was a great interview, man. It was great getting to know him, just talking about his journey. I mean, I feel like he's one of those guys, one of those coaches that kind of got it from the ground up, you know what I'm saying? Got his opportunities at different schools, made his mark, and then moved up from there, right? And you talk to anyone about, especially like people out here in 315, because he coached at Hamilton, so like he still has a lot of connections out here. So I'll mention to people, I'll mention different people like his name, and their face will just light up just talking about him and just saying how good of a person that he is. But he's an even better coach, man. He's a winner. He goes to programs and he just wins. And you could tell like he just has a chip on his shoulder when he comes into work every day. He just wants to, like I said, he just wants to win, and he loves basketball a lot. And I think I asked him at the end, like, what keeps him going? And I think he just loves basketball. He loves, you know, coaching. He loves doing all that stuff in between. So I definitely respect Coach Anderson a lot for his career, what he's done for the game of basketball, and also, you know, who he is as a person.
Yeah, 100%. A really good guy. I like that you brought that up because, I mean, shout out to Coach Riley for patching us in, but like Tobin was instantly ready to get on the podcast.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of love. But what I want to talk about with his system, it's like, it's a really complicated system. I mean, they're getting after on offense and defense. And why I really like this system and why I bet it's really fun playing under him is, you know, like you have the freedom to go hoop. It's like, we're running a five-out offense. If you can break your guy down, it's just you and him. It's one-on-one. So, like, oftentimes, you and I know this, like, you can work all offseason as college basketball players, and then you get into your system, and then the coach wants you to play in, like, the shell or, like in their system instead of just, like, being a basketball player. But in his system, you're able to pretty much play free and make plays, and you talk about a guy like Dimitri Roberts who – like is really tough, had no scholarships or anything coming out of high school, but like Tobin saw something in him, and then he's able to flourish in that system, breaking guys down one-on-one at the highest level against FAU or against Purdue guards. And another thing, like Tobin talked about this in an interview, but he gives these players this freedom, and he understands that there's going to be mistakes, but you just got to go get back after it on defense. And as a player, when you know, like, it's not the end of the world if you have a turnover, you lose the ball trying to break someone down. If you get it back or you're putting 100% effort, that's going to make your game go to the next level 100%. And, like, it's tough to play against a system like that because they're not only attacking you on offense, but if they score on you, they're not running back to half court. They're just, like, right back in your face trying to get a steal. So, I mean, I 100% – like, I mentioned the Grinnell system, and that's just, like, free-for-all. Like, we don't care if we get scored on. But Tobin's discipline sets him apart. I'm gonna put a clip, I think, of, like, him coaching his guys. But I think I sent you it. He was, like, cursing his guys out.
No, we're not gonna beat Charles with that. I mean, that's a losing fucking mentality. That we're going to throw a fucking lob pass on one pass and try to beat College of Charleston? Really? That's what we're going to do. That's the idea. Did we score? Maybe we score. I'm not going to say anything. Throw the ball off the rim. Like, it's just, that's not winning basketball. Balls away. Let's go. Let's run. Let's go. Here we go. Balls away. Let's go. Balls away. Let's go. Sideline. Let's go. We need to run anyway.
And, like, you don't see this a lot. Like, a coach that's letting his guys play free, but he also, like, keeping that fine distance of, this is how the system is ran, and we're not going to just do whatever. Like, this is how I want it, but you guys are also going to have this freedom at the same time. So, I mean, I really think Coach Tobin Anderson is one of the best coaches in the country.
100%, man. And we had a long conversation about his system, and you're 100% right. Like, I'm pretty sure I said in the interview, like, his system kind of creates havoc both on offense and defense and kind of puts the defense on their heels because of the constant movement or the constant pressure. And you're 100% right. When you have a coach that lets you rock out, like, I think Coach Coffey here at Utica does a lot of that.
100%.
He lets his players hoop, and obviously within reason, within a structure, but he lets us go. And I think when you do that, I feel like it lets your players have that much more confidence in themselves. So, I mean, I feel like that's just a trademark of a really good coach, it seems like to me. But yeah, I definitely love their system a lot. It seems really cool.
Coffee's definitely like that. Like, it's tough playing against you guys too, because you know it's going to be physical on when you guys are guarding. But also on the other end, it's like you got to be able to guard your yard or guard your position one on one, trying to break dudes down. So I like that you noticed those parallels. But I mean, Iona this year is going to be tough. We talked about it at the end of the episode, but like, 13 new guys is a challenge, but Coach Tobin is like, I like taking tough jobs. I like the steep challenge. He knows that, you know, bringing in a whole new roster is going to bring its difficulties throughout the season, but I'm looking at their roster, and I know some of those guys, like DeJore Reeves, he's preseason first team All-MAC, and he's tough, but like, Coach Tobin Anderson really went crazy in the transfer portal this year, and I think that they're gonna have a really good year and a decent conference.
And they got a really good young guard out of New York City. Adam, I don't know how to say his last name, but Adam Nish, I don't know how to say it. But he's really tough, and I remember watching him play when he was younger. But he's a really good player. He's gonna be good for them. I think he's their highest recruit that they've gotten in a minute. If I'm not
That's tough.
For Iona. Yeah, I think he was like a 3 or 4 star coming out of high school, which was really good for the program.
That's tough. And that brings up another point. Like, Coach Anderson is a Division III guy. And we see the parallels all the time of D3 coaches. They have an eye for talent that's different than these other people that are just going for like narratives or like 5-star players. Mm-hmm. Coach Anderson, he said, like, I'm not trying to get the 20 point scores. Like, I'm trying to build a team. So I might go after like someone that's just playing defense, but I know that that's going to ultimately help our team. So, I mean, there's just, we talk about a ton with Tobin Anderson. I mean, we got to mention the Purdue game a little bit more because, I mean, when you play a guy like Zach Edey, he's like 7'3" and towering over all those guys, you got to mix it up a little bit. As a 16 seed, he beat the number one seed, the only second team in history to ever do that, which is just crazy. And like, people still to this day are like, that's just a fluke. But Coach Anderson talked about in the episode. That wasn't a fluke. Like, he really believed in his guys. And when you have a coach that's going to the locker room, he said right before the game, like, I've been looking at these guys and I really think we can beat them. So, I mean, when you have a coach that believes in you like that, it's obviously going to make you play harder, but also believe in yourself that these guys are basketball players at the end of the day too. I can compete with them. We can do something crazy too. So, I mean, we talk about a ton with Coach Anderson regarding his basketball career and then, you know, coaching at various different schools, the FDU run in the tournament. And then finally, like, you know, what we should expect from Iona and Coach Tobin for the rest of his career. So it's a really good episode. And like always, subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, any other platform. Make sure to hit that follow button. Your Thursdays will be a lot better if you hit those subscribe buttons. We appreciate all the support, for real. It's definitely growing day by day, so keep on with that support. And let's hear from Coach Anderson. We are here with that boy, Coach Anderson. How you doing today, Coach?
Doing great, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate you getting on, Coach. Like we were talking about off air, you know, I know it's a busy time right now. We had to reschedule a couple of times, but definitely appreciate this.
I appreciate you guys making time for me and being flexible and making it happen. But you guys are doing a great job. I've been seeing your stuff on social media, doing an awesome job. And I'm always here to be part of things when guys have passion for basketball at all levels. So it's great.
That's love. I want to start just some preseason talk. So we're both Division III basketball players, and NCAA changed the rules a few years ago where you can have 8 non-traditional practices before the actual season starts. So, you know, Ruta and I are getting into those practice things. But I'm curious how you're running things as the Iona coach right now. Like, what are the specific rules, or how have you been running practices so far?
Yeah, so it's a little bit different, obviously, because our guys are here in the summertime. So we had 38 workouts in the summer, in June, July, and August. And so you get a really big head start on the season. A lot of those are, especially with a new team, we're trying to adjust to each other and get to know the players. So it's like, it's not as much, you know, obviously, it's a lot of X's and O's, but more just like getting to know the players, getting to know each other, just general concepts. Now we're starting to get a little more detailed, a little more how we're doing things, teaching more. A little more specific. So we've had, you know, our fall workouts. Now we get 8 hours a week per week. And then we start officially the big weeks start next week. So we got one more week to go. Mm-hmm. Then like September 24th is our first day of like official practice. So it's good. I'm happy that Division III finally went back and changed the rule. We can actually get on the court with the coaches a little bit. I mean, my whole life it was very frustrating to not have a chance to work with your players, you know, in the off season. I see, you know, if you're a musician, you can meet with your teacher, can help become better at that. If you're a singer, if you have a passion for something, you should be able to work with people and help them get better. So I always was very frustrated in Division III about not being able to get on the court with your coaches before the first day of practice. So I think it's a great rule change. I got a lot of great friends in Division III who are you know, some of my best friends, and like they love it. They love the preseason now, and it's not too much where you're getting exhausted or getting worn out, but it's enough to kind of get you going as you get ready for the season. So that's a great thing.
For sure. I definitely agree with that, Coach, because when I was a freshman, I came in, I was part of that class. It was like October 15th was the start date for us. But then the rest of my sophomore year was the same year. But junior and senior year, now we have 8 practices before October 15th. So it really allows us to, you know, get acclimated to each other, like you said, and like work together on the court.
Yeah, I think it's good. It's good to like spend time together. Like, I mean, I think I used to get frustrated Division III where you couldn't be around your players, like get a chance to spend time with them as much, because it's like they couldn't be in the gym with you. So now at least I get a chance to get to know your coaches. They get to know you a little bit more. There's more time. Like, I think it's a great thing. Just beyond the basketball part, it's great for relationships and getting to know each other. That's part of it is really good for every person.
So I'm a little curious about this, Coach. You're, if I'm not mistaken, you're coming up on your second year at Iona.
Yeah.
And you moved from FDU, you were at Stack, you were in Hamilton and Clarkson. So I just want to hear about how you've kind of got acclimated to New Rochelle and that, you know, new living situations and all that.
Well, one of the funniest parts about the last 3 years, the last 3 jobs from Stack to FDU to Iona, is I haven't had to move. I've been in the same house. And so we live in Sparkill or in Orangeburg, all these towns are all connected. Like when I grew up in Iowa, like there was like a town that would be like 30 miles in another town. In New York, it's like they're all like you go from one town to the next. So I guess I'm in like three towns. I'm in like Spark Hill, Orangetown, and Blauvelt. So when I was at Stack, I was 5 minutes from my house to school, right? Then went to FDU, I was like 20 minutes away. And now I'm at Iona, I'm like 30 minutes away. So we've been in the same house, living in the same place, go to the same restaurants. I still work out at Stack in the mornings a lot of times. So that part has kind of been the same, which has been great. So, but yeah, listen, you go new school, and I've been a head coach. It's my sixth head coaching job. So it's always, you know, you have to get to know the school and the people and how they do things. And like, you got to figure out the names of the buildings and where you go to get answers and stuff. So it's always an adjustment. So year two is always a little bit better as far as just knowing what's going on. So that part's good.
Yeah. I mean, earlier you talked about growing up in Iowa, and I was reading that you went to Interstate 35 high school and you were coached by your father. You got inducted into the Wall of Pride recently. And I just want to hear, like, you went to Wesleyan where you had a great college career. How did you manage to find yourself in Wesleyan, where that's in Connecticut, like an 18-hour drive?
So I went to prep school, Maine Central Institute. At the time, it was back in that time, Max Good was a head coach there. It was the best prep school basketball in the country. We had the best team. We were 32-0. And I was not a big part of the success. I was like the backup to the backup point guard. I was a third student. Now, the two guys ahead of me were both, you know, high level players. One went to UMass, one went to VCU. So, but I was not, you know, I was not on the floor for a lot of the big games. But anyway, MCI for 3 years didn't lose a game. They were like the 95 game winning streak. They were in Sports Centers and Sports Illustrated, the premier prep school. And so I wanted to go play in the Ivy League. I wanted to go play at Princeton. I wanted to play at Yale. I wanted to play at one of those schools. Well, I couldn't guard anybody. So, which I think, and Max Good was a defensive coach, and he kind of told me that numerous times. He's like, well, you need to go, you know, somewhere. And I wasn't playing. I was the 13th or 14th man on a really good team. I wanted to play. You know, you have 4 years of college, like you want to go someplace and be on the floor and have an impact. So I went to, so the guidance counselor at MCI was a guy named Dave Barnard, who's actually a Wesleyan graduate. And he said, you can't play in the Ivy League, but you can play in the NESCAC. You can play at Williams or Wesleyan or places like that. So he kind of got me into that whole thing. I applied to school, visited the school for about 2 hours. I liked it. They're coming off a really good season, and it's an excellent school, great academically, in a great conference. And I quickly found out that the talent level at Division III was pretty damn good. And it just kind of fit for me. Like, I mean, I could have gone to Division I and sat on the bench and not played. And, like, I didn't want to do that. I knew there was no pro career for me, right? So I knew that at a certain point I'm done playing after 4 years. I want to have a chance to play. Like, I wanted to go have a chance to have a career and play and be part of a team and all that kind of stuff. And so I did. I mean, I went there and I had a good career individually. We didn't win as much as I wanted to, but like when you're going to go against Williams and Trinity and Amherst and Tufts and people like that, man, it's not easy to win.
High level basketball.
No. And so, it was very competitive and I met a lot of great people, a lot of great friends, and Wesleyan's a great place. And I couldn't speak more highly of the school and the people that I met and was around. I'm still have a great relationship there with a lot of people. So, no, it ended up being a great choice for me, but it was just kind of weird how the whole thing happened, because it just happened to be the guidance counselor was a Wesleyan guy, and he's like, he kind of guided me in that direction. I'm like, you know, that's where I went. It worked out.
So first question I got for you, Coach, following that, I want you to talk a little, you talk about building connections at Wesleyan, and, you know, how we got connected with you was through our guy, Coach Joe Riley. Shout out Coach Riley. He's great. Love him a lot. He's a great guy. Great coach too. So I want to talk about how you guys got connected and talk about your relationship a little bit.
Well, Joe is an awesome guy, an awesome coach, and an unbelievable job at Wesleyan too. So as an alum, I'm obviously proud of what he's accomplished there. And I follow, I support, I'm a big fan. I stopped by practice last year to watch him practice. And so Joe and I talk quite a bit and text all the time. And so he was an assistant at Yale back when I was first getting started. He's a little bit older than I am. He went to Trinity. So NESCAC connection, went to Trinity, played. He was graduated before I got to Wesleyan. So he's a little older than me. So he's an old man. I'm still young and vibrant. He's an old man. But so, you know, he's like one of those guys I saw on the road, and I'm a young guy. He reached, we talked, we became good friends and spent a little time, and, you know, we would call each other and talk a little bit. And so it just ended up happening. He was at Bates. I was at Hamilton, and then he got the Wesleyan job, and you know, we just kind of stayed in contact, and I've tried to support them as much as I possibly can. And yeah, he's a guy that just like he's a great coach, but a better person, part of a great basketball family. I used to go watch his brother play. Brother played at Hartford, Luke Riley, with Vin Baker. So I spent more time at Wesleyan going to other college watching games. Like I went to watch UMass play, and Calipari was coached up there. I went to Hartford all the time. I watched Vin Baker play. My backcourt mate was Brendan Leary, who was the all-time leading scorer when we left, and his dad was the head coach at Southern Connecticut State. And so we'd go watch Division II games all the time. So my GPA is not as high as it should have been. I spent more time watching games. I should have been studying more in the library. Plus, Wesleyan's a hard school, so I was kind of like not doing as much work as I should have been. I saw a hell of a lot of basketball games, and so Joe's a great dude, I'll be pulling for them. You know, Wesleyan got a big football win yesterday, so I'm football, basketball, like all that stuff. I'm a big, huge supporter of Wesleyan, and I follow that stuff every game.
So, Coach, if I'm not mistaken, you got your first – you were a young coach working under Dave Paulson for two seasons at Lemoyne, if I'm not mistaken. And yep. Coach Paulson, he's at Holy Cross right now, but I'm pretty sure he has almost like 28 years of college head coaching experience. And he coached at Division III school. He coached Patriot League, like Bucknell, Lemoyne, St. Lawrence. So I just want to hear how he influenced you as a young coach and for your coaching career.
Well, there's another NESCAC Division III connection. So Paulson, Dave Paulson went to Williams, and he was on the team. His role there was like my role at MCI. He was like the 14th man on a 13-man roster. He didn't play a whole lot, but a great coach, obviously. And so that's me being a Wesleyan guy, him being a Williams guy. We kind of made a connection. I was an assistant coach at Clarkson. He was a head coach at St. Lawrence. We're like 10 minutes away. We got to know each other. He hired me at Lemoyne, and like, yeah, he's been a huge influence on me. Just a great person, great coach. He taught me so much about the college business, about how recruiting and relationships and running a team. And like, you know, the guy won a national championship at Williams. You know, he's won at Bucknell. He was going to – there should be a statue of him in front of Bucknell. He was killing the Patriot League when he was there. He'll do the same thing at Holy Cross now. So, no, he's a big influence on me. We still talk. We were at a clinic together a couple weeks ago, the two of us together, talking basketball, spending time. You know, he's just a guy who knows the game. And the same thing, Division III guy, small college guy. You know, played, coached, won, had success, and then moved up the ladder. And he just is just a super quality person, but an excellent basketball coach and one of the smartest people I've been around. Like he just has an incredible knack for like figuring things out and knows how to get things done and good with people. You know, and he's great. Only problem with Coach Paulson is we used to go for runs all the time, and he would He would go for these jogs, and he would go so damn slow. I'd have to go do another workout after he went. So he's not speed is not one of his best qualities, but he is a everything else. He's not a great athlete, but he's a great person. So no, he's a good dude. Maybe my biggest influence as far as college coaching was Dave Paulson.
Definitely shout out Coach Paulson. And before we ask any other questions, Coach, this has been on my mind, and I wanted to ask you this earlier, but so I talked to KJ about this, and. You talked about doing basketball clinics, and if I'm not mistaken, a couple years ago, I don't remember what camp it was I went to. It was probably like a hoop group camp. I saw you, and you came to the camp, and you were doing dribbling drills, and you were like basically showing off your like basically insane, yeah, all that stuff. And you know, you look on YouTube, like if you look up Tobin Anderson, Iona, you could see those clips, but you could also see like open practices that you have videos of. Yeah. So I want to hear, like, how you kind of got involved with these coaching clinics and all that.
Well, the ball handling stuff, like, my dad was a high school coach. And so all those drills, like, this guy named George Lehman was a great shooting coach. His brother Austin, they had a video out about ball handling drills. So I would do those ball handling drills. Like, people talk about doing them every day. Like, I did them every day, right? So I got to be really good at handling the ball. So I became in great demand as far as being a speaker at clinic camps and doing that kind of stuff. And I was really good at it. Like, I still have, like, I'm old now. I'm 52 years old, and so, but I can still handle the ball. Like my handle's still really good. I can. That part is that. I don't do it as much as I used to. But I did it at camp this summer. So I just kind of like had a knack for that, and you know, spoke with the 5-star camp, hoop group camp. I've been, you know, all over the country, and so that was. I did clinics in Hawaii and stuff like that. So I've just kind of word of mouth. You know, things get people get the word out that this guy does a good job with this, and I got connected and had a chance to meet a ton of great people and. Speak from a lot of great groups and meet a lot of coaches, and it helped me with recruiting too. Because I go someplace and I say, well, here's this guy who looks like a, you know, I walk in looks like a golfer or a tennis player or something like that. I can actually handle the ball, and I get a little bit of street cred right off the bat. So I was laughing. So last year, or 2 years ago when I was at FDU, they had us on the CBS the show. There was a live show.
I saw
guys,
that.
Yeah, I heard you could handle the ball. And it was Wally Zerbiak and those guys. They threw me a basketball. And like, I hadn't worked my handle. I mean, in the middle of March, hadn't done that stuff in a long time. And so he's like, yeah, just show us what you can do. I shouldn't dribble the ball off my foot, but I actually handled it pretty well. So just a knack, I think. I'm like, there's certain things I can't do, but I can handle a basketball. So that's like, I can make free throws and handle a basketball. So like my two strongest things I can do better than most people.
So I see in like the open practices that early on in practice, you got every player is just like dribbling the ball. You guys are doing a lot of dribbling. Is that something that like a player must have in your system, is being able to like play with the ball or have some craft with it?
I just believe, and I think that's true for shooters, for anybody, like basketball is a game play with your hands, right? It's not soccer. It's not something in football. Like the ball's got to feel like part of your hand, right? So I'm big on like the ball's got to be comfortable, and like you pass it, catch it, shoot it. So many things happen with the ball in your hands, and like you'll be able to feel connected, you know? So I think the more you can do those ball handling drills, like all that stuff. I mean, I saw UConn doing them last year. I mean, Bob Hurley, who's a good friend of mine, another mentor, great guy. Like his players always do that stuff. And so we've always do them every day, big guys, guards, just to feel more comfortable. So some guys don't handle the ball as much, but they have to shoot it. They have to catch it. The ball's got to be connected, you know? So I know that when I was a player, I felt so much better when the ball felt like part of my hands. Like I felt comfortable with the ball in my hands. And so we're trying to get our guys to feel as comfortable as possible with the basketball, a little bit of confidence with it. So yeah, we do that stuff every day. We spend time on ball handling, one ball, two ball, probably 8 to 10 minutes a day.
100%. I love that, coach. And especially nowadays where, you know, you're kind of playing basically five out basketball where everyone needs to space it, everyone needs to shoot it, and probably everyone needs to handle it and make plays. So that's definitely a trait and skill that a lot of players need to have. So I love that you guys incorporate that in your practices.
Absolutely.
But moving on to the next question, coach. So it seems to me, just looking at, you know, your coaching resume, like you're kind of an upstate guy. You started as one, you know, you were at Clarkson for a little bit.
Yeah.
You were at Lemoyne. What I really want to talk about is Hamilton.
Yeah.
And Hamilton, you know, I go to Utica right now, and I'm sure back in the day you guys were beating on us pretty bad. You know, kind of now the times has changed a little bit. You know, we've gotten some wins. But
you guys are doing great, man. I'm fond of you. You guys are doing awesome.
Yeah, man. We've definitely turned it around the last couple of years. Shout out Coach Coffey. He's definitely built a great program here.
Excellent.
But you know, talking about Hamilton though, you had your first NCAA tournament appearance back in 2005, 2006, and I'm sure this is a memory that you cherish. So I just want to hear, like, what did you learn from that first, like, NCAA tournament run back then?
Well, like, the Hamilton thing was hard. Like, I kind of liken it a little bit to our year last year at Iona, where I took over for a guy named Tom Murphy, who was a head coach here for a long time, and he was unbelievably successful. Like, he won 602 games, one of the most successful small college coaches of all time. And so to follow him was not easy, right? You follow him. And so we actually had my first year, and I made some mistakes. I was young and probably didn't know how to handle certain situations. It was a tough situation. Taking over for a legend is not easy, right? Especially at a place like that where like everybody, you know, the respect was off the roof. The players loved him. And so, and with good reason, right? So we had a tough first year. And so it was good the next year to come back with basically the same team. And kind of like, I think I learned a few things. I did a better job with the players. Became a little more patient, listened a little bit better. Things you learn as you get a little bit older. And it was great to go from, like, I think we were like 14 and 13 to the next year going to 23-5 and winning our league, winning in front of a great fan base in Hamilton back then, and going to the NCAA tournament. We actually ran into Amherst too. I couldn't beat Amherst when I was a player, and I couldn't beat him as a coach either. Dave Hickson was in the Hall of Fame. Dave Hickson in the Hall of Fame. So
that's our guy.
A lot of success, so it's not easy to beat David. A lot of guys lost to him, but we went to Amherst and got beat in the second round. But no, it was a great experience. And I mean, I had a great bunch of guys on that team too. Guys I'm still close with on the Hamilton team: Stanton Peck, Phil Valente, Tim Wilcons. Like great guys. And so it was like Nick Jones, just a great group of guys. So it was fun to go there and go to the NCAA tournament. And you know, it's hard. Like you guys know, in Division III, it's hard to get the NCAA tournament because, you know, you have to, I mean, there's not a lot of large bids, right? So you got to win your conference tournament, and then you got to get a large bid, you got to be basically like 25-3 against a great schedule. So it's probably the hardest level to get to the tournament that there is. And, you know, to get there was a special thing.
So you were at Hamilton for about 6 to 7 years.
Yep.
And if I'm looking at the timeline, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, it looks like you took like a 2 to 3 year break after you left Hamilton before you went to Stack.
No, I went to Siena as an assistant.
Yeah.
I went to Siena as an assistant. So I was kind of like, in my career, I was ready for a change, right? I've been at Division III. And the things that you talked about, the frustration of the no offseason work. And in SCAC, we couldn't start till November 1st. I think they've changed that now. But you couldn't start till the 1st of November. So you basically had from when you finished your season until November 1st, you couldn't work with your team. You couldn't be in the gym. And I think I was getting to a certain point of like, I wanted to be, and I love that part of coaching. I love being in the gym, individual workouts, seeing guys develop. So I wanted to get kind of a change, right? And so the Siena job was assistant head coach with Mitch Bonagaro, good friend of mine from Five Star, the Five Star Camp, and their camp clinic connection. And he had an assistant job open. I said, you know what? I'm ready for a change. So he hired me, went there for 2 years, and we didn't win. We had first year was okay. Next year was not as good. We just couldn't get it going. And so he got fired, and when they fire him, they fire the whole staff. So then I had to go to back, and actually I got lucky to get the St. Thomas Aquinas job, go to Stack. But that was a big move for me career wise. And like, it actually worked out great because I wanted to go get a feel for Division I. And I learned a lot being at Siena as far as like what it takes to run a program at that level, at Division I level, and like things you should do, things you shouldn't do, things you have to do better. And at the end of the day, it's just at this level, you have to win. Right. So it's a little bit different all the other stuff is important as far as like, everybody's got to like you, be a good person. All that stuff's important, but you have to win here. They can love you. You can be the best guy in the world. They can all that kind of stuff. But if you don't produce on the court, it'll be a short stay. So it was good to see that, be reminded of that and kind of understand where that's all about. So, yeah, that was actually a big part of my career was making that move, and it didn't work out as far as like the success there, but it kind of paved the way for I think my future after that.
It's funny you say that, because like if you look at your win totals after, like, it doesn't show up on the timeline I'm looking here now, but you say that you guys didn't win that much at Siena, and your first year at Stack you guys won 15 games, but then after that the next time that you won under 20 games was in 2023, and you got that head coaching job in 2013.
Yep.
So I just want to hear, like, which is, that's saying that out loud is kind of crazy, but 10 years of 20 plus wins. But I just want to hear basically, like, what do you think, like, clicked for you? Like, how did you create, like, consistent success?
I became a better coach. I know after being an assistant, I just became a better coach. I think when you go back to being an assistant, you can kind of take the emotional, being a head coach is hard. And like, I mean, Dave Paulson, we still always tell me this, my dad was a head coach for 25 years. Everything falls on you, right? There's a lot of emotional stuff going on. You put a lot of blame on yourself. You put a lot of pressure on yourself. Sometimes you can't see all the things that are happening because you're so tied up emotionally, right? When you're an assistant, you're still, you feel the same way, but if you're not as like, it's not the intense pressure all the time. So you can kind of like see, I can step back and see, hey, when I was a head coach, I used to do these things and they didn't help. They didn't work. Like it kind of hurt the team, or I'd say something to the team, it would affect us negatively. And I said, when I become a head coach again, hopefully someday, I'm going to do a better job of handling things in a different way. And so I just became a better coach, a better leader. I was able to kind of step back and see things through a different light. And I think that was a great thing. I think going back and being an assistant after being a head coach for 12 years really helped me as a coach. And then the reality is too, I went to a scholarship, right? The first time being at a scholarship level, and like, it's a lot better recruit at the scholarship level, where I can go out and I can get the guys I want to play our system. And that helped a lot too. So, I was going, being non-scholarship and going financial aid and going and like, that's, there's some great parts about that, but man, it's hard. It's hard. Cause there's guys, it's a grind. You can't get the guys you want sometimes because of other factors, So I tremendous credit to guys who at Division III can win and win consistently and recruit that way. And it's recruiting's tough. I mean, when I was at Clarkson, we would bring up 50 kids on visits, and because of our location and be in the middle of nowhere, I mean, you guys are going to Potsdam, New York. People do not want to go to Potsdam, New York. So we lose 45 of those guys just because they don't want to live up there, So it's like other factors involved. So Yeah, but no, I think the biggest thing, just learn how to be a better head coach. I mean, listen, you should get better as a coach, right? You should improve. And like, I think me being an assistant helped me improve. And like, yeah, the numbers got better. I did a better job. I was able to understand how important staff was. You know, like you have a great staff around you, and you know, and then administration, all that kind of stuff as well. But no, it was a good that 2 year period for me learning how to be better at what I did was huge.
Yeah. I mean, Stack became a national like powerhouse when you were the coach there. You spent 9 seasons there, and the last 7 years you were there, 7 straight trips to the NCAA tournament. And oftentimes when we talk to coaches that spend like a good part of their life, build memories, you had a family there, they say like leaving that school was one of the hardest decisions they've ever had to make. So I was just wondering, like, you took the job at FDU after a great career at Stack. So I was just wondering if you could talk about that process of like what was going through your head leaving Stack to go to a 4-win team in FDU.
Yeah, so Stack, really proud of what happened at Stack and being able to go. They were like a 5-win team and going from 5, like you said, 5 to 15, then to the NCAAs every year, 20 some wins, 25 wins all the time. We had great players, great coaches, administration, the whole thing. So, you know, as we had more success, there was more opportunities to hopefully go and coach at Division I. So I was always, you know, there were a lot of times jobs would come open. I would talk to ADs, and I would talk to search committees about the jobs, but I couldn't get any place. Like I was the guy they would talk to, and they'd hire somebody else because you're a Division II coach, you know? And so I was getting a little frustrated at times at the end, but what you can't do is get frustrated and then not do a great job. So we had to keep winning at Stack, and like I want to keep winning, but at a certain point, it's kind of like, well, yeah, I'm going to stay at Stack the rest of my life. I'm fine. I'll stay here. We'll like a national power. We'll keep winning. I love the people here. It's a great place to work. I love the administration, all that kind of stuff, right? So I was kind of resigned to the fact that this might be what it is the rest of my career. And I'm like, that's the case. It's a great job, and I'm happy. And then the FDU thing just kind of all of a sudden came out of nowhere. It was late in the spring, and I had a connection there. The associate AD, I knew a little bit, Jason Young, and so I got involved. It happened really quickly, and it's funny, like when I was, you know, talking to them about the job, you know, people were like, well, you should just stay at Stack. But I'm like, well, if I want to be a Division I coach, I probably have one. This is probably the one chance I have. You know, if I say no, I may not get another opportunity. So if I really want to try Division I and be a Division I head coach, this is my opportunity. It's my chance, right? So I kind of, and I've always been a guy chip on my shoulder, like trying to prove myself. I wanted to play Division I, couldn't. I didn't play Division I. So I wanted to get to this level and have a chance to coach here and see if we could have success at this level. I really believe we could. And I thought it would even help us get even better because we'd have more. You know, when you call in your Division II and you call a recruit, they still want to go Division I. So there's a lot of guys who kind of like hold you off and they put you on the back burner. So I wanted to go to a place and be like, all of a sudden now we're Division I. Now, obviously, when you're at FDU, you're one of the lowest Division I. So they still don't want to talk to you too much. But like, it was my only opportunity. I think that I had to jump at it. People said, don't go. People said, you know, it's a tough, you know, FDU's an impossible job. It's a tough job. But to me, Clarkson was an impossible job. St. Thomas Aquinas was an impossible job. So I don't mind taking tough jobs. And that's kind of one of the things I've been able to do is take tough jobs and do well at. So it all kind of worked out. And I was lucky. I had a great AD there, great associate AD, great people there. Ended up bringing 4 of my players from Stack with me, which helped a lot. And like a little bit of a cheat code, you know, you bring your, if I could have, I'd have brought more guys with me, but and we were able to have a lot of success there in the 8 months or 10 months that I was there. But a lot of that was, I had a great people, great AD. And like, we have dinner. I had dinner with those guys like a few weeks ago. Like I'm still very tight with them, and they gave me an opportunity to coach at this level. So I was very grateful, and yeah, it worked out great.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy how life works. Like, who knows where Tobin Anderson's life would be right now if you never took that job at FDU. But stay with us. We got a lot more to talk about while we take a quick break. Come back, talk about your FDU success and Iona basketball. All right, we're back. So obviously, FDU got a lot of national recognition for 2 years ago, the NCAA tournament you guys went on. And I don't think that everybody knows the circumstance that happened. Like, you guys were playing in the NEC and played Merrimack, lost in the conference finals, but they were unable to make the tournament. So my first question is just, did you guys like understand that circumstance going into that game?
Absolutely. Right. So we knew, so Merrimack was ineligible all year long. Everybody knew that. Right. So we were hoping, like, they were the one seed. They had a great year. And we knew if we could get on the opposite bracket of them and be the two seed, then if you get to the finals, you play them, that you, you're going no matter what, right? So we were on the opposite bracket. We finished tied for second. So we got the two seed. And so you win your first round game, Merrimack wins. They played the game before us on that Saturday, so they won. So we knew playing St. Francis of PA in the semifinals was, if we win, we're going to the NCAA tournament. So we knew that. So the hardest part, honestly, was the fact that, like, after we won, like, we stormed the court, the people, we were going to the NCAA tournament, is now to get yourself ready to play on Tuesday for the championship. But, like, we'd already qualified for the NCAA tournament, right? So our guys had already, you know, so it's just funny. Like, and like, we wanted to win that game. Actually, we were ahead. I think we led 35 minutes of that game. We actually played very well. And we kind of took our foot off the gas and, you know, down the stretch. And credit to Merrimack, had a very good team. And I wish we'd have won that game. But I think that loss might have helped us get ready for the NCAA tournament because we were a little bit irritated about how we lost. We really had the game. We were controlled the whole – if you watch the game, we were in control the whole way. But we didn't finish. And you got to finish, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was interesting. But going to a game like we already qualified for the NCAAs and, like, it wasn't the same, you know, pressure. I mean, to win that game, you guys know, to win that championship game and go to the NCAA tournament is such – we were very jacked up for the St. Francis PA game because that's the game that gets you in the NCAA tournament. Going to Merrimack, still want to win. We're on ESPN2. It's a big game, but there's not the same nervousness or like sense of urgency when you know you're already going. And but it was a heck of a game. We played really well. They played well. They got us at the end. But like I said, I think that might have helped us a little bit get ready for the NCAA tournament. But you know, we learned, because I remember during the Purdue game, I kept saying to the guys, hey, like, listen, we got to keep playing. We got to play to win. We can't be tentative at all. You got to go make plays, because we didn't do that. We actually brought up Merrimack. You know, it's not like Merrimack. Don't let us not try to do things and keep stretching the lead and keep playing, you know? So it helped us a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, moving on into the tournament, first four game, you guys got Texas Southern, and that game wasn't close, but I mean, Texas Southern was a really good team that year. You guys defeated them 84-61. And then you get into 16 versus one seed. You guys got Purdue. And this is arguably like one of the biggest upsets in basketball history. I was looking just for fun. It was a 23.5-point spread, a minus 8,000 money line. So definitely messed up the books a little bit. And then you guys lose to FAU 78-70. It wasn't the prettiest game, but I just want to hear from your perspective, like, what that was like game to game, Texas Southern, then Purdue. We're going to talk more about Purdue. And then finally, like, that FAU game, if you could just talk about that whole run in general.
Well, first of all, like, we played really well all three games, which is great. You know, we played really well all three. There was not a game where we were great. Like, you know, people talk about the Purdue games, that was such a big and obviously a big monumental upset, the whole thing. But we played great against Texas Southern, and we had a lot of respect. They'd been in the NCAAs 4 years in a row, so they'd been there, they'd done that, they were well coached, and it was the third biggest margin of victory in the first four of all time. We won by 25 points and played terrific. Like, shared the ball, shot the ball well. I think that win and the way we did it and how well we played, like, kind of gave us a little bit of confidence going into Purdue, because we'd already been, you know, you go to Dayton and you're playing in front of 10,000 people, places packed, you're on national television. We weren't used to that. So to win that game kind of gave us, like, we're here, we've done this now. Now let's go to Purdue and we are, you know, we won't be as nervous, we won't be as uptight. We played an NCAA game. And I think it helped us to be ready for the next round, you know. And I obviously it did, because we played great that game. And then I, even just as proud, after beating Purdue, we came back against Florida, like, third game in 5 days against another top 25 team. And, like, man, we're up most of the second half, and, like, they caught us at the end. They had a great team, went to the Final Four, obviously, but we were right there to beat them. So it was a great run from the standpoint we played well all three games. We, like, one thing we did, like, we weren't a great defensive team all year long. We really guarded for those three games. It would be nice to play that way the whole year through, but it was really good to play that way in the tournament. So yeah, we played our best at that time of year, which is what you want to do as a team. So yeah, it was incredible. It was an incredible run, but not. I mean, people look on the outside and say it was a fluke or it was kind of like what, but like, we played really well. You know, you go watch those games and say, man, this is at that time, we're a heck of a team. Were we a great team all year long? No, we were a good team. We made a big, you know, we went from 4 wins to 21 wins, but like, we were that, by the time we got to the tournament, we had become a really, really good team, almost a great team at that time of year.
I mean, yeah, you said it. Like, this is a top 25 team. I read an article. You said we lost to a top four team, but we were a top 25 team. And that might have not been shown throughout the regular season, but the way you guys are playing towards postseason, I could definitely see that.
Yep, absolutely.
It's just to go back on a point you made. You talked about how, like, you guys were kind of irritated after that Merrimack win or loss, rather. And it kind of seemed like it, like, looking at the game and the box score, like, you guys smacked them, like, you know. But I just thought that was kind of funny. But also something I'm thinking about too, like, you talked about how, like, as a player and a coach, sometimes you have, like, that chip on your shoulder. And I'm wondering, do you think, like, heading into these big games, especially as, you know, working for FDU, that sometimes, like, maybe your players embodied that too?
I think that's one of the biggest things in recruiting and in coaching is to get guys who have a chip on their shoulder, you know, who want to prove themselves. So, like, we had a backcourt too. We had a backcourt at FDU, Demetri Roberts and Grant Singleton. I've been around Division I now for my third year. I've seen a lot of guards. Those two guys are as good a guards as there is anywhere in Division I, right? Now, they're small. They're small guards. Everyone was one. Demetri's 5'8", and Grant was 5'10". Neither one had a scholarship offer from Division I or Division II before they came to Stack. They didn't have any scholarship offers at all. Not one. Not so. There was no Division I scholarship offers, but also no Division II scholarship offers. So when they had a chance to come with me then to FDU, Stack, they'd won a ton of games, been to the Sweet 16 every year. Every year they win the tournament, they were in the Sweet 16, right? Both of them are All-Americans. Both of them were great. When they came with me to FDU, which ended up being a great move for all of us, they wanted to prove that they could do it on the Division I level. So when they got to the tournament, it was like, hey, here's our chance. Like, we've always wanted to be here. Here's our chance to show how good we are. We can play at this level and have a lot of success. And man, that they in life you get opportunities, right? And, like, you take advantage of those opportunities. And I think both those two really took advantage of their opportunities and really, like, you know, didn't shy away from the pressure, the excitement, the stage, you know. And they both played terrific. I mean, Demetri Roberts in that Florida Atlantic game, like, there's about a 10-minute stretch when he was like Isaiah Thomas. Like, he was just incredible. And, like, I had seen that so many times. So I'm like, I'm not surprised by this at all. But then the rest of the world got to see that too. So that chip on your shoulder, Rudy, you talked about, like, I think that's like, we recruit now, like, I want guys who have a chip on their shoulder. I want guys who want to prove themselves. I want guys who come here and, like, we're mid-major, right? But, like, say, I'm as good a guard as anybody in the country, and I want to prove that. And so we get guys like that. Trying to get guys like that here too as well.
100%, coach. That's the way to build, like, I think, a winning program, right? Like, if you have a bunch of guys and coaches that all have that chip on their shoulder, right? Even if you are a top 25 team, right? Even if you are a top in your conference, if you have players that all have that type of mindset, like, that's just going to take you a long way. So I definitely agree with that, coach, and I love that.
Yeah.
I have one more question about the tournament. So you guys played Purdue, like you mentioned, and they had a player named Zach Edey, as I'm sure everyone in the basketball world knows about Zach Edey. He was a lottery draft pick this year, if I'm not mistaken, for the Grizzlies. He's a really good player. I mean, I think he's really good. And I just want to hear, you know, I know how the NCAA tournament can be. You know, you're watching film till late at night, especially after a win, trying to figure out different schemes, how you want to guard certain players. So I'm just wondering what the scouting process was like for a player like Zach Edey. Because you only really had 2 days before you played them after the Texas Southern game.
Well, another advantage we had was, like, you're in the play-in game, right? So we know we're playing Texas Southern. We know we beat Texas Southern. We're playing Purdue, right? So you get the brackets on Sunday, right? So we're already getting to work on Purdue. My assistant, Cam Rell, was who played for me at Stack. So we had a whole 5-6 days to get ready for Purdue ourselves. You know, two coaches are getting ready for Texas Southern, and then we got one guy get ready for Purdue. So we knew that could be a possibility. So that's kind of where the whole thing happened, where we said, hey, we could beat Purdue, because Cam kept watching Purdue. And he's like, man, I think we match up well with Purdue. It's like, we knew there were certain teams in that tournament we did not want to play. You know, you go play Kansas, or you go play Alabama, who's got, and, like, we thought the advantage was in the backcourt. We had better guards. And the guys I talked about, Demetri and Grant, we thought we had better guards. So it's like, you know, and then obviously Zach Edey, major, major mismatch problem. So I'm like, all right, we're going to be able to press them. We're going to be able to make them defend. We can guard their perimeter guys. But Zach Edey might score 50. You know, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, we can't. We got 6'5" post guys. Like, he may score 50. If he scores 50, what are we going to do, right? But we were able to kind of frustrate him and like, make him miss some shots around the basket. And, like, we doubled him some and just kind of made him uncomfortable. And so he still scored 21. But, like, you know, it was not like he dominated the game, right? Then he couldn't guard, right? So we put him in ball screens. We put him in action. We said before the game, We got to make Zach Edey guard three actions, like every possession. Everybody's got to guard three actions, whether it's a flare, whether it's a ball screen, a zoom, some cuts. And then they matched up him on the kid, Sean Moore. So, like, they didn't put him on our center. And so Sean was like, he's from Ohio. And he's like, I want to show the world. I got a chip on my shoulder, too. And so he played great. And you know, it's funny that Purdue game, though, it's like everybody's like, well, what you must have played above your heads. And, like, we actually shot like 39%. We didn't like go crazy and like make a ton of unbelievable shots or go crazy. We just outplayed them. But I think the matchup was the biggest thing. Like, we knew that we could cause him problems with our guards and with our pressure, with our quickness and speed. And I think it helps when we talked about style a little bit, KJ. Like ours, people aren't used to playing against pressure all year long. We press for 40 minutes a game, right? So it's like people aren't used to that at all. So you get the tournament, and like Purdue had, after we won, they had a couple days to prepare for us. It takes time to prepare for the pressure. Like, especially if you're not, and then we knew they weren't very good against it, that we had an advantage there. So I think our style really was a mismatch problem for them. But yeah, I mean, Zach Edey could have scored 50. And I'd be like, that's probably what's going to happen, but like, we'll deal with that. But we actually, our big guys played so well, and they were just so competitive. And like, you could see them lose confidence. Like, the one thing about the NCAA tournament, like, when the favorite is in trouble and the whole arena starts to kind of like get excited, like, you could just feel that arena. Like, you we were there, and like, I'm coaching the game, and I could feel that place, you know, them getting tight and them getting nervous, and like, this might happen. And then our guys get more confidence and the place is starting to go after you. Just that part was like so surreal, because it really like became like a whole like wave of just craziness happening. So and like, our guys took advantage of it. Our guys played great, but they went like for 9 minutes and he didn't touch the ball or he didn't take a shot. You know, imagine that. Like, that just like wasn't, it was just wild. So it was, yeah, it was just kind of all those factors kind of came together. We took advantage of it.
I mean, it's, you know, watching the game, it kind of just seemed like they got sped up, right? Like, yeah. I feel like a lot of the time with pressure, and especially in your press, like, you're just trying to make people uncomfortable, speed them up, get them out of their, you know, get them out of their comfort zone. And that's the goal. But I want to talk about one specific point you brought up about like that wave of energy when you play, like when you're playing against like the top seed. KJ knows what I'm about to tell the story. But so me, KJ and I worked for the We Are D3 TBT team with Coach Reg this summer.
Yep.
And Coach Reznyak, and they played against Team Heartfire, who had a lot of like basically like high level Division I players, and they won the TBT the previous year. Oh, wow. So like, We Are D3 was like the underrated matchup. And towards the end of the game, it starts getting close. We Are D3, it's neck and neck game. Daquan Davis ends up hitting a three to put them up two, right? And then the whole crowd in Dayton, because the Red Scare, the Dayton alumni team, was playing right after. So all the Dayton fans were all in there. And they all seen that We Are D3 was starting to make that push back. So as we hear at the end, we all hear, "Let's go D3. And then the whole crowd is going crazy and there's a wave of energy. So as soon as you brought that up, I thought of that moment, Coach.
Absolutely. That's the good thing about being the underdog sometimes, is that people just they love the underdog, you know?
Yeah.
That's just what happens. And so, and then guys feed off that and guys hear that energy. And I watched that game. I don't remember all the details, but I was watching the We Are D3 the game, because I was, you know, obviously, unless I'm a D3 guy at heart, so I was watching some of the games. I was excited to see them get a win against a good team, yeah, but no, that part's awesome. That part, you know, when in Columbus there was 20,000 people, and you know, I'm not sure before the game started if most of those people knew where FDU was or knew who FDU was, and they're chanting FDU at the end of the game, and like, it just doesn't make any sense. But like, and our players could hear that, our players fed off that, and it was and Purdue could hear it too, and that bothered them. So yeah, that's what makes the tournament so great. Like, that people talk about expanding the tournament and getting rid of the smaller teams, but it's those upsets. Like this year was Oakland beating
Kentucky.
Yeah. I mean, like, I actually was watching that game. We had a recruit on campus. We were at a restaurant watching that game, and I had the same feelings I had on the sideline when we were going to beat Purdue. Is like, you just know, like, Kentucky's tight and they're nervous, and it's like they got to make shots and they're not making shots, and it's like the underdog actually has an advantage because they're playing loose and they got nothing to lose. And that's an awesome part of the tournament.
So, like, on social media that night and, like, the following days, all I could see on my feed is, like, FDU upset Purdue. I was listening to an interview with you, and you were saying how, like, Bill Belichick texted you. Steph Curry was talking to some of your players. So I was just wondering, like, Was that kind of hard to come down from, like, that high of, like, we just, like, shocked the world, everybody's talking about us? Was that, like, a challenge for to get your guys, like, back locked in for FAU? Or talk to me about that.
You know, I think our guys were so in the moment and so excited about what was going on and the next thing that they were, like, it didn't feel like that. I mean, there was so much going on. Listen, there was, we went to breakfast the next morning. I didn't sleep. I think I slept for maybe half an hour. Cause I mean, I got my hotel room. We watched Fort Atlantic play. I was on Sports Center and all these interviews. My SID, Jordan Sarnoff, is a great guy. He's a student, actually. He's a great, and he's like, you got to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, I got to go watch this game. And he's like, this Tobin, it's the one chance we got to get FDU on the national stage. I'm like, all right. I did all these interviews and I'm watching the game. So I didn't get to my room till like 2:30 in the morning. And I remember I turned my shower on. I was going to shower. And I'm like, do not check my phone. Just don't look at my phone. Well, I looked at my phone. I had, you know, texts and all that stuff. And so I ended up on my phone for about 2 hours, right? And then, so I didn't sleep. So the next morning, we go to breakfast and there's a camera crew from CBS who's going to say they're going to follow us the rest of the tournament. I mean, we're going down there and I was on Good Morning America. So I'm like, I can't open my eyes. I'm so tired. So, and we're getting ready for Florida Atlantic. And then like those camera crews, they're talking to our players. They're talking to our coaches. We're trying to talk about, you know, scout report stuff for FAU, the schedule. And they're like right there listening to us. We actually had to put a room to ourselves, a place we could go to, like away from the cameras and talk the real talk. But, yeah, it was a lot, right, for our players to all of a sudden they're on CBS nonstop. There's this unbelievable attention, but they handled it so well. And we, like I said, we played against FAU. We didn't play great the first half, but we actually played really well for the game. And like there was no aftershocks or from the Purdue game at all. We played great. I was probably a little bit tired from a third game in 5 days, but we played well. So no, we handled it. But it was, let me tell you, Steph Curry sent us gear and shoes and notes. It was texting our guys and Belichick. And I mean, I can't tell you how many people like just reaching out to you and seeing, you know, being in the arena. But we went in the arena the next day. We got ready for FAU and we're playing music. We have, you know, guys are dancing around. They're making TikToks and stuff. We were pretty loose, but like really focused, really ready to go. And like that part of that, we had those two guards who had been to the Sweet 16 before. They're like, fellas, we got more stuff to do here. Let's try to get another win. And so I thought we played well. I mean, we just ran into it was funny because Memphis, FAU played Memphis. They should have lost. Memphis was up and they should have lost. And like, I hate to say this, but I think we'd have beat Memphis. Like I think, and FAU was, we could have beat FAU. It was a harder matchup for us. If we'd have played Memphis, I think we'd have beat Memphis because I think our press would have really caused them problems handling the ball. But, you know, FAU found a way to get a win and they got us.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I also wanted to mention and I'll move on, but like, a lot of coaches, when they get in big time moments, they just try to keep everything simple. But you were looking at like the little things in basketball. Like Purdue is starting a freshman guard. I don't know how often, like how that's gonna affect him. So I really respect like you looking at the little stuff like that. Like what grade is this kid in? What hand is he better with? Stuff like that that coaches wouldn't really look at. But moving on, I mean, historic season, only two teams have ever defeated a number one seed from a 16 seed. So you're one of those two teams. And after that year, you move on to take the job at Iona. You're replacing Rick Pitino. And you just mentioned like how hard that is to replace a legend like that. So I was just wondering if you could talk about that process of leaving FDU after such a historic and memorable season to go to Iona.
Yeah, that was hard, right? That was really hard because we just came back from the tournament. And the, you know, such an unbelievable thing, such an unbelievable moment together as a team. We're all together the whole time. We're in the, you know, just such a, you know, bonding experience amongst our fans. We had two fan buses there of fans. People were flying in. We had a ton of, you know, players. It was incredible. Like you're all so together. Then you go back home and like literally, I was on the Today Show the next morning, and I came home. My wife and kids hadn't been in school. My wife's a teacher. My kids were in school. They hadn't been in school in like, you know, 10 days. So they had to go to school. They hadn't slept at all either. And so they go to school. I mean, I sat at my couch, got a Diet Coke out, and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to relax here and like not pay attention to my phone, which I have a hard time not doing. So and then the Iona president, who I knew because I almost got the job when Pitino got the first time, so I knew him well. We'd been texting throughout the season, stayed in touch, and he's like, hey, you know, basically, you know, let's get this done. And I'm like, you know, and he's like, call me when you're ready. And I'm like, you know, I might as well just do it now. There's no point putting it off, right? But I'm like, it was hard. So I called him up and I talked to my agent and, like, you know, the other jobs are out there. This is a job that I wanted. This is a job that makes sense for me. My footprint close to where I've been coaching, recruiting wise. It's a place that's won for a long time, won forever, right? And it's a job that I wanted, right? So that all worked out. But hard to leave FDU, especially after what had happened. Like, really hard. Like, I mean, I went. So I, you know, I had to call my AD. My AD was Brad Hurl, but if he's not the best AD in the world, he's in the top two. We talked, and he was just like so supportive and so understood, and was great. But then telling the players the next day, I mean, it was hard, so hard. And coaches who've been through it, who really care about their players, they know that's one of the hardest things to do is walk in that locker room and tell them you're leaving. And like, I was the guy, I was very upset, very emotional. The guys were great about it; they understood. So that was hard. And the good thing was with Jack Castleberry, my assistant, got the job. But then, you know, coming here and like, yeah, following, I think people say, you know, following Coach Pitino, and I have unbelievable respect for him. A lot of stuff, how I coach, comes from stuff I learned from him, watching how his teams play and things like that. But Iona, like, they've won for a long time, right? So Tim Kloos won a lot, and Kevin Willard won a lot, and Pat Kennedy won a lot, and Tim Welsh won a lot. So there's a lot of guys who've been through here who have won a lot of games. So, it's a place where they're used to winning. And you have to win, you know. And so, but yeah, following Pitino's Coach Pitino's not going to be easy, you know, because they've won. But like the way things are now, there's such a everybody's moving and stuff like that. It's just kind of like, hey, you have to do what you do. And so, yeah, it was for me, it was a move that I wanted to make, and it made sense to me for a lot of different reasons. And happy as heck to be here, but it's a challenge, obviously. And we got more work ahead of us to do. And it kind of like going to Hamilton. I'm hoping, like, you know, following Tom Murphy, that one year it took us a year to kind of get our feet set, and we made a big jump the year. Next year, I think we're in the same boat now. We kind of got our feet set a little bit here now, and we're ready for a year or two, and gonna do big things. And people here are so supportive; they want to win. It's a basketball school, which I love, and there's a chance to be really, really good here. So it's been a crazy last 3 or 4 years, obviously. So, I mean, you know, and then you put that on top of the transfer portal and NIL, and it's like all hell's been breaking loose in college basketball. So there's a lot of things going on. So you're just trying to try to get yourself on a little bit of a stable ground, which I think we're starting to get a better feel for.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see, like, year two, the guys are starting to hear the same voice for a second year. Like, all of those things, being with a coach for another year, it definitely, like, pays dividends, and you can see that in a lot of programs. But I want to transition into a different topic. You've coached at numerous Division III, Division II, Division I schools, and, like, listening to that opening practice, it seems like you're getting on guys, you're cussing them out. You have, like, this disciplined culture, this up-tempo culture. I'm wondering, like, when you first take over a new program or a new team, you go to a new school, what is your mindset and how you're building this culture? Like, do you try to keep it the same every school you go to, or talk to me about, like, that whole process?
That's actually a great question, right? So it's like, you know, is it your culture, or do you kind of have to get a feel for the school, the people, all that kind of stuff? It depends on how many guys you have back. Depends on the situation you're going into. There's a lot of factors go into that, right? I think the biggest culture thing you need is a culture of hard work. And so, like, a lot of it's got to come from us too, the coaching staff. So it's like, they got to see you working hard. They got to see that you're with them. Like, you talk about, like, getting on the guys, but, like, the guys know that we're here for them. We love them. We care about them. So, like, even today, before we got on our Zoom, I had, you know, probably 10 or 12 guys stop in the office here to say hello, just on a Sunday, just to talk and to hang out. So you got to have that backbone of, like, they got to know you care about them. That's important, right? Then they got to know that you're here to help make, to get them better, right? And then they got to know that you're going to work hard right there with them, you know? So, you know, I can't be on a cruise in the Bahamas, you know, a week before practice starts. I got to be here, right here with them on the court, sweating and sweat equity and all that kind of stuff. And so I think the culture part is, and it takes time, right? The culture, building a culture takes time. And, like, they got to get where the language, the terminology, like how you, like, what's important to you, you know, what's important, like, what's important to how we're going to play basketball. Like, what's our foundation, you know? For us, it's our defense, it's our rebounding, it's our press and our motion offense. And so, but they got to understand that. And, like, it's a day by day thing where it's like, culture is not what you talk about, it's what you do, right? What you do every day. And so we're trying to just, you know, every day get a little bit better, work a little bit harder. get a little more together with the guys and things like that. And so, yeah, but it's not the same every place you go to. Like when you go to a place that hasn't won, it's almost a little bit easier because they're so used to like, they want to change. They want something different. They don't want to keep losing. They want to win. So that those, they're going to listen to everything. When you go to a place that's won before, they're kind of like, well, why would we change what we're doing? When I went to Hamilton, it was like, why would we? And I understand, like when Tom Murphy is a coach here, they used to play different than how I played. But they're like, the players are like, why would we change? We've always won this way. And I'm like, well, that's a good point, but that's not who I am. I think I was a little less flexible back then. As I've gotten older and got more experience and been through being an assistant, I'm a little more flexible, get a better feel for our players, you know, what makes them tick a little bit more. We do a lot of stuff with them. We do a lot more team stuff, a lot more bonding things. We're going to a team retreat next weekend, like with just the team and the staff, like things like that that we do that are just trying to build those bonds. But it's hard. Like new jobs are hard. It's grueling. It's time consuming. So I mean, I'd like to be able to stay at a place like when Stack was great. When I was at Stack for 9 years, like the players could run that whole thing. You know, I'd like to be at Iona for 9 years and have the same situation where we got a little bit of continuity. That'd be great. But but now it's changed because of the transfer portal. So it's like it's hard to keep guys for that long. It's just, you know, but you got to adjust. You have to adjust. You got to make it work. And that's what we're trying to do. And I'm a coach who's been a head coach for 24 years, but the whole thing's changed. I'm learning now new things that I never had to do 15, 20 years ago.
I mean, coach, if anyone's, like KJ said, if anyone's up for it, we know you're up for a coach. So we definitely expect great things out of you. I have one question about you. You kind of brought this up, but I don't want to simplify your system for the audience too much, but you're like basically five out constant motion offense, or even your full court press on defense. You're putting other teams in like basically constant pressure, or even panic, if you will, right? Just with constant moving or just, you know, defending the ball, whatever it may be. How did you identify like these concepts as key parts to your program? One, but two, how do you think it developed like moving through Division 1, Division 2, Division 3? Like just talk a little bit about that.
That's a great point, a great question too. So like, well, the motion offense, yeah, the way we play started from my father, my dad, who was a big Bob Knight disciple in Indiana motion offense. Bob Knight was a motion from Henry Ivo was a passing game to Bob Knight motion offense. My dad was a big motion offensive guy. And so when I went to college at Wesleyan, we ran a lot of sets. We cut on the floor and I was a point guard. We would call a different set every time down. And I did not like that. Like I was not, especially when you come from motion where it's like you have freedom to play, freedom to make decisions, and then go into a set. So I'm like, when I coach, I know motion. I understand motion. So, but now the motion, that offense has changed a lot as there's more, we set less screens now, do more cutting, more penetration. Like we're more of a penetration emphasis on offense to get the ball to the paint. You know, we used to set a lot of down screens and shoot jumpers. We don't do that as much anymore. So like more, the offense has kind of changed as how the game's changed, right? We're trying to live in the paint. We're trying to get to the, you know, and kick out threes and playing off penetration, playing off cuts. Spacing is so important to what we do. The press came from Pitino, and same thing, my dad, like even though my dad was a huge influence on me. And so his motion offense, Bob Knight's motion offense, we've always played man-to-man defense. And the press came from Pitino. My dad saw him at Kentucky when he first got the job there, how they played. He started pressing. I liked it. We started doing it. But here's the thing, right? When you're Division III, sometimes you can't always get the guys you want. You don't have scholarships. You don't have the ability to get exactly who you want. So sometimes, you know, we would have Hamilton, a bigger team, you know, not as quick, not as athletic. We couldn't press as much. Our press was not as effective. So we had to go more. We might start off the year pressing, at the end of the year, play more half court. Now I can be a little more how we want to play. We can recruit more now to how we want to do things. So I think we've become a little more like our press has been our press at Stack and here than it was at Hamilton and Clarkson. We couldn't do all that the whole time. So it depends on your personnel a little bit. Like our press will be different this year than it was last year. And a little bit of like, I think KJ alluded to this, is like we want to adapt to our players a little bit and what their strengths are. And like the culture of how we play can be a little more flexible. And it's been more flexible as time's gone on. And I'm still learning. I think I was less flexible last year, a little more flexible with this year's team. And I think we'll be a different team than we were last year. But the emphasis on motion offense, press, man-to-man defense will always kind of be the same. Just kind of changes how we do things.
So you talk about adjustments, and I'm just kind of curious about this too. Like analytics have definitely changed the way I think some people look at basketball or even to a point how basketball is played today. So I'm wondering how much of an influence you feel like analytics has had on you and your program.
Quite a bit, to be honest with you, right? So I'm wearing an Alabama shirt. My son's is a freshman in Alabama. He's a manager down there for Nate Oates. Nate Oates is a good friend of mine from the Firestar camp, again, their connection. So I was down there, and they're big in analytics as far as offensive goes. Like a ton of like shot selection, shot diet, shot quality. And so we've kind of adapted a little bit of their stuff. And so, yeah, we're into it, you know, especially on offense, especially with the shots we're taking, the quality of shots we're taking, getting to the paint, you know, layups, threes, anything that can get to a 1.0 point per possession is huge for us. And so, yeah, no, we pay a lot of attention. I got a video guy who's awesome. And so he kind of runs that analytics stuff. And so, yeah, when we definitely have do more of that. Like we chart, obviously defensively, we're charting deflections. We're charting forcing turnovers, turnover differential, things like that are important. Those are always important. Offensive rebounding percentage is important to us. But I think from an offensive standpoint, getting the shots you want to take, the shots that are good for not only for each person, but more importantly, good for the team. That's a thing that it's changed a lot for me. You know, it used to be like you'd say, hey, that's a tough shot. That's not a good shot. Well, now it's like, that's a 0.6 shot. That's a 0.4 shot. Like, we can't take those because analytically, it's not a winning play. That helps a lot to explain to the guys. And like, you know, you guys know how it is. If you tie the NBA into anything you do, guys are more apt to listen. So if you're like, hey, this is what they're doing. Listen, fellas, in the NBA, this is what they're doing. So, you know, you want to play in the NBA, you're going to hear this stuff all the time. Might as well hear it now. It helps a lot. So, yeah, we definitely are big into analytics. Yep.
That's kind of crazy you say that because we just had our first practice here at Alfred, and Coach Kempfield was like, this is kind of like what the Denver Nuggets do. And everybody's eyes just like, whoa, we never heard Coach Kempfy talk about the NBA. So definitely understand what you're talking about. But, I mean, we got to talk some Iona basketball. Yep. Last year, you guys finished 16-17, 10-10 in the MAC conference. And looking at this year's roster, you're bringing in 13 new guys. Yep. Over the break, we were talking and you were saying how, like, all these guys are really good and it's going to be a challenge. So I just want you to talk a little about this year's team's roster and how you plan to combat a below 500 record from last year.
Yeah, last year was a tough year. Like, we didn't, like, record wise, like, not good, but like, even just the vibe from how we played, like, we lost games we shouldn't have lost. We weren't as competitively our stuff. Like, we wasn't our kind of team as far as like just being tough enough, competitive. Now, listen, that's on me. I don't think I did a very good job of the team, probably. Didn't have them in the right situation to win. So we kind of went back to our DNA, kind of to our foundation, like what's made us good throughout my career. I'm lucky I've got a staff who's been with me for at State, Thomas Aquinas, and at FDU. So we kind of know the players we're looking for. We call it the Iona DNA, like things that we want in players. So when we went through the process in the portal and in the recruits, was like, we want guys who are, our DNA is like competitive, tough, chip on their shoulder, high basketball IQ, love basketball, want to be in the gym all the time, can make each other better, you know, things like that. And so we went back to that, and I think we did a great job getting those kind of guys. You know, we're not, you know, there's certain things that we're not a great shooting team. We're not a pretty team, but we're tough, we're physical, we can defend, we can press, they want to press, they want to go after people, they want to be the aggressor. So we got a couple guys that we got two Division II guys who are you know, one, and we got two guys who average under 10 points a game, but one guy was the defensive player of the year in his conference for two straight years. So he can really defend and wants to defend and understands how important that is. And so, you got to think, like, you're not putting together an all-star roster, you're putting together a team. So like, everybody can't be a guy who, you know, this guy was just 20, this guy was just 20. We don't want guys who their primary attribute is scoring. Like, you got to have some guys who are really going to defend and going to rebound and going to make the right play. So I like the guys we have now. I think most coaches feel good about their team in the summer and in the fall, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. So we're trying to go one day at a time here and just get a little bit better every day and get ready for the season ahead of us. But no, I like the team a lot. I feel good about where we're at. I think we're in a good situation, good spot to have a great year. And I was not, you know, like you talked about, we'd had a lot of success for a long time. Going 500 last year, one game under 500 last year was not fun for anybody. So, you know, that's a little bit of a chip on our shoulders, kind of like that we don't want that to happen again. So we got a lot of work ahead of us, but I do think we're heading in a great direction. And at Iona like. We're used to putting up banners and cutting down nets and winning championships, and we want to keep that going. And like the one thing they haven't done here, they have not officially won an NCAA game before. So they've been in the NCAAs a ton of times, but they haven't won a game. We'd like to go to the NCAAs and win a game, you know, because that's something that no coach here has done before. So that's hard. First of all, just getting there is hard, and then win is really hard. But like that's what the goal is here, and so we're moving in that direction, hopefully.
So we're definitely going to be locked in on Iona this year, Coach. I'm definitely excited to see what you guys do this year.
Sure.
But we like to end these episodes kind of with like a bigger than basketball question. And I'm just kind of curious, and I know KJ is curious about this too. Like, you've obviously like won a lot and done a lot of great things in your coaching career. And you know, you still, like you said, you're Iona, and hopefully you're going to be there for a long time. But I'm just kind of asking you now, as a coach that's been around for a minute, like, what keeps you going at the end of the day? Like, what keeps that chip on your shoulder? What keeps Coach Anderson like in the gym every day, ready to put in work? Like, I want to know that.
That's a great question, right? So it's like, and people would think my whole life has been basketball, right? My dad was a coach. I've been in the gym, you know, watching his practices and being around basketball my whole life, and then playing, and then obviously coaching. Like, people say that my wife, my mom would say, well, if I didn't coach basketball, there's not much else I could do. And there might be some, I could be a pro fisherman. Maybe I could definitely do that, but like, I'm not sure what else I could do, but I also love what I do. Like, I love this. Like, I don't ever get to like if Utica's playing Alford on a Tuesday night, I'll put on D3 hoops and I'll put the game on.
Let's get it.
I'll watch a Division III game on a Tuesday night, as opposed to doing something else. Like, I love basketball. Like, I love being in the gym. Like, I just love, I have a tremendous passion, and it hasn't never gotten any less. Like, you know, it's like, that's what I love to do. Like, when basketball season starts, I'm watching games all the time. I love that kind of stuff. You know, I love the fact that I can sit here before our games and put a game on TV. And, you know, I like watching, I like the scouting part of things. I like all that stuff. So I just think I have a great passion for what I do. I think that started by my dad being a coach and just being like, that's what I enjoy doing. And I found a way to kind of make a career out of it. And it's good to have a career when you do something that you love, right? When you wake, there's not a day wakes up, I'm not excited. I mean, I'm driving in today excited about, hey, our motion has to get better. I some ideas that can make us better. And like, so that part's great, but you have to have a great people around you. Like, my wife, I have a great family around me. My dad, my parents obviously were great people. My brother and sister, great people. And I have my wife and my kids. So you gotta have a great support. You have to be a coach's wife is not easy. So my wife, Jody, she's awesome. She misses the Utica day. She misses going to Cavallo's and Wings too. So, you know, we grew up in that. That's where my kids were born in that area. So it's like, having a good family around you is a great thing too. And then just being like, I love the fact, like, being around like young people, like being around college people is a great thing. It's like, there's energy on campus. There's energy from our players. It's all new for them. And, you know, our guys talk about going to the NCAA tournament. Like, you want to help them. Like what we did at FDU was like so special and like a once in a lifetime thing. And those guys will remember that for 50 years. And they'll tell their kids, they'll tell their grandkids. And like, I'd like to have our guys experience, be hard to experience that, but like, if you can get in that same ballpark, go to the NCAA tournament and see all that, that'd be pretty awesome. So you want to see your players have unbelievable experiences. And I think that's in, like, these guys, you know, most of them haven't been in the NCAA, so we're trying to get back there and do something special for them. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, just having that passion and having that fire and loving what you do and all that kind of stuff. But yeah,
I mean, Coach, you're a basketball junkie, and I can definitely see how that sets you apart compared to some other coaches. So I definitely respect that. And I mean, we're going to end this episode with a little rapid fire and starting five edition. So let us know you're ready for rapid fire.
I love it, man. It's awesome. Let's do it.
All right. So first rapid fire question we got, Coach. I need you to name the top three funniest players that you've ever coached.
Top three funniest players. Ross Greenfield, who was a walk-on for us at Stack, became a scholarship player. I just told a story about him the other day. He was out of his mind, right? Phil Valente, who played for me in Hamilton, was nuts. And then probably a kid at Clarkson. Probably Dan Broderick was funny. Funny in his own way. Those three guys were funny guys, funny dudes.
Okay. Next rapid fire question. I need you to rank the schools, like the food in the surrounding area. I need you to rank it from best to least best. So not worst, just least best, we'll say.
All right, that's good. Well, listen, when I was at Clarkson, there's a place called Angelo's, a seafood restaurant that was like one of the top five restaurants of all time. So Potsdam in general, the food was not good, but that restaurant was awesome. So I would say I would say Stack because I still live there. That's the best. They have the best wings place, best Italian place, best ice cream place. All that stuff's right there. So I would say Stack one. Boy, Utica was good. Like Hamilton, Hamilton was great because they had the chicken riggies, the pizza, the wings, the old school Italian restaurants there. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. I would say Potsdam's probably third. I own it. It's good here, but it's kind of similar to Stack. So it's like fourth. And then the worst was FDU, like Jersey, like, you know, Jersey's the best food in Jersey is like cotton candy and funnel cakes, you know? So I'd say that would be the worst food.
Okay. I could definitely see that out of Jersey. I'm not gonna lie. But last rapid fire question I got for you. So you said you could be a pro fisherman, if I'm not mistaken. You said that. So cool.
That's my own personal opinion. Yeah, I'm not sure anybody else is saying that. But my own personal opinion.
Well, it makes me ask this rapid fire question. Like, I want to hear just about like your favorite pastimes outside of basketball. I know you're always watching basketball, but when you're not watching basketball,
thanks.
I mean, fishing. I love fishing, right? I love that. My son ran cross country. It's funny. My son didn't play basketball, but he's actually a manager in Alabama. But he did. I love cross country. Like, I became a huge cross country fan. Like, I love watching like running races. Like, I love that. I'm a huge baseball fan. Love, my dad coached baseball. I played baseball, so I love.
Who's your favorite team?
I would say right now the Mets. It goes up and down, right? So because in Iowa there's no pro team in Iowa, so you can't like the Cubs used to be. And my friend from Wesleyan, one of my good friends, is Jed Hoyer. He's the president of the Cubs. He was he's a schoolmate of mine, same year behind me in college. So I've been following the Cubs a lot. But I like the Mets now, being up in New York here. I've become a big Mets fan. So yeah, baseball, fishing. I'm not a good golfer. Like, I don't really like golf that much. Like, you got to spend a lot of time playing golf. So I wouldn't say that's at all. Like, I love to eat wings. I like to eat wings, and that's a great thing. I was going to show you a picture of the fish I caught this summer. It's like, just people, because people are always like, you don't really catch fish. Or
are you like a deep sea guy or
nope, a freshwater? So here's the one I can see this one. This is the one I caught. This is the lake trout I caught this.
Oh,
I caught that back in June. That's a lake trout. It's going to come on my wall here pretty soon. So
that's tough.
So like, you know, people can talk about fishing, but like, they don't have any results. So it's like winning games, right? Like, you got to catch fish, right? So like, yeah, I like lakes. I like going to Canada and fishing and that kind of thing. So I don't fish. I don't get a chance to fish enough, but I wish I fished more. But maybe when I retire, when I'm like 80 years old, I'll fish more.
I like that. And you mentioned the Mets. I know Root is a Mets fan. You are a Mets fan. So I guess since the Red Sox aren't doing too well this year, I'll root for you guys for the rest of the year.
I appreciate that. They're right there. I got a chance to make the playoffs.
Yes, sir. But all right, so we're going to move to the Starting Five edition. And shout out Ruta for this one, because this is a great idea. So Starting Five edition, if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be one player from each school. So you've been a head coach at five schools: Clarkson, Hamilton, Stack, FDU, and now Iona. So one player from each school, and you got to build point guard through center.
Wow.
That's really tough.
You're trying to get me, and then my old players are going to listen to this, and they're going to get mad at me for leaving somebody out. So that's what's going to happen. But, well, let's go. Point guard would be Demetri Roberts, the kid I had from Stack and FDU.
You got to pick, though, like the Stack Demetri or the FDU Demetri.
I'm trying to think how I can balance that out, right? So I'll take the FDU Demetri.
Okay, bet.
Right?
FDU is gone.
I'll take the Stack two guard, Chaz Wattler.
Okay.
He scored 2,000 points for us at Stack. Was an unbelievable player, unbelievable kid, right? Just tremendous, right? So I got Clarkson, Hamilton. All right, let's go Clarkson. I'm going to take Stanton Peck.
At the three?
Hamilton. Yep, my three-man Hamilton. Unbelievable. Like, just hard-nosed, tough kid. Like, winner. The unbelievable is great, right? And I got Clarkson, right? Mm-hmm. Ashton Fritz, who was our four-man. He was a great, great player, great kid. He actually got me hired at Clarkson, so I appreciate that. So I got to get a five-man at Iona.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I only had 1 year here. I don't think that's – okay. I'm going to take this year's five-man. I'm going to take Clarence Rupert, who's our five-man this year. I'll take him. He's a St. Peter's transfer. I'll take him. That's actually a pretty good team.
So is that team still same offense, same defense we're getting after it?
I'm trying to think of my four-man. Yeah, but Fritz is not a great four-man, so no. it'd be a great offensive team. I'm not sure it'd be the best defensive team. We'd have to outscore people, but
I like it. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. Coach, this has been a wonderful episode. We really appreciate your time. And like Ruta said, we're locked in on Iona basketball this year. Big fan. So good luck this year, and appreciate you.
You guys are awesome, man. I tell you what, the questions and the way you handle things and all that kind of stuff, whatever I can do to support you, man, you guys do a great job. And it was fun being on here and talking basketball, and you guys do an unbelievable job. So keep doing what you're doing. Keep on that passion. I'll be cheering for both Alfred and Utica until you guys – you guys play twice a year, right?
Once this year.
Oh,
he's got to come over to Alfred this year.
I went to Alfred one time. I got teed up at one of the Clarks. We went to Alfred. And we got beat by like 20, and I got teed up. I mean, it was like three guys out of the local town bar were refereeing the game. we got drilled, but they actually had a really good team back then too. But yeah, that's not an easy place to play. Alfred's not easy to play, not easy to get to, not easy place to play. So that'll be I'm gonna try to watch. Make sure you text me when that game is, so I'll put it up on my I'll watch it on my computer.
100%.
Definitely got you, Coach. We appreciate those kind words too, for real.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.